अहंकारं बलं दर्पं कामं क्रोधं च संश्रिताः माम आत्मा परदेहेषु प्रद्विषन्तो भिसूयकाः. Translation: bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and blaspheme against the real religion. Purport: a demoniac person, being always against God's supremacy, does not like to believe in the scriptures. He is envious of both the scriptures and the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is caused by his so-called prestige and his accumulation of wealth and strength. He does not know that the present life is a preparation for the next life. Not knowing this, he is actually envious of his own self as well as of others. He commits violence on other bodies and on his own. He does not care for the supreme control of the Personality of Godhead because he has no knowledge. Being envious of the scriptures and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he puts forward false arguments against the existence of God and denies the scriptural authority. He thinks himself independent and powerful in every action. He thinks that since no one can equal him in strength, power, or wealth, he can act in any way and no one can stop him. If he has an enemy who might check the advancement of his sensual activities, he makes plans to cut him down by his own power. Ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodham ca sanshritaha mam atma paradeheshu pradvishanto bhisuyakaha. Everyone has ego. Everyone in this material world has false ego. But not everyone's called a demon. In this chapter is called the divine and the demoniac. But the most of the chapter is taken up with a description of the demoniac. So this verse is a description of what it takes to be a demon. If you really want to be a demon, here's a guidebook for you. You know, all the things you have to do and the kind of attitude you have to have. See, Krishna is like a desire tree. If you want to be a devotee, he gives you instruction. You want to be like a demon, he also gives you instruction. It's all there. This must have been the part of Bhagavad Gita Duryodhana was listening to. Yeah, great. That's it. Yeah. Must have been really into it. So excessive egoism is demoniac. Everyone in this material world has false ego, a sense of being separate from Krishna, separate interest from that of Krishna. So in one sense, everyone in this material world is a demon. But those who are trying to curb that, instead of trying to cultivate that false egoism, and they are called saintly or pious, and those who are trying to develop Krishna consciousness, surrender to Krishna, they are called devotees, even though the demoniac tendency is still there. So this egoism is what we have to go. This false egoism. Ishvaro ham aham bhogi, siddho ham balavan sukhi. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy without Krishna. This demoniac attitude is to be gone beyond by devotees and understand Ishvara Parama Krishna. He is the supreme controller and we are simply meant to serve him. Nevertheless, I guess we can all recognize in ourselves, if we can't, then we're really in trouble, but that we are not free from egoism. And it may be that even people who are devotees or trying to be devotees or superficially devotees or whatever, they may exhibit egoism or what appears to be egoism to a degree, an extended degree, a great degree. We have to be careful with this kind of judgment because it could, I mean, if you wanted to see through the wrong kind of glasses, then you could also accuse Srila Prabhupada of egoism. He instituted, or Guru accepted Guru Puja every day. He had people bow down to him. He taught them to bow down to him. He spoke in a very authoritative way and called people by all kinds of bad names. Actually, he didn't call people by bad names directly, but he would describe them as being fools, rogues, rascals, and so on. Nonsense, animals, hogs, dogs, camels, asses, tenth class, and so on. So, it's not necessary that if a devotee is speaking strongly or taking a high position that he is egoistic, but it may be. The desire to be seen as something special, that is egoism, and that was absent in Srila Prabhupada. He wasn't that he was cultivating the desire to show him something as something special. He was clearly, what's that word? Self-manifestedly special. And therefore devotees they reciprocated in an appropriate manner. That's why we're told to follow in the footsteps of great devotees, not try to imitate them. If we imitate and try to show that we're special, but there's nothing inside, hollow inside, then that's called imitation. We make the outward show, but there's not the of being very advanced. Whereas advancement in Krishna consciousness means that one should be fully humble, but inside one is showing advancement to nurture one's own egoism, that people will think that I am very special. So, some people come to devotional service, they spend some time in the movement, then they go away blaming others. They couldn't get their egoism fulfilled. It means that they gave up bhakti rather than gave up their own egoism. Seems they were never in egoism. They never tasted bhakti ras. Or maybe they did, but that taste of bhakti ras became eclipsed by the desire to be seen as something very special, and which is just the same desire as any materialist. In Australia, there's not a devotee, some imitation god, and he came to some program and with Prabhupada, it was public program with many people, and he was dressed in odd clothes. His followers called him the wizard. And he stood up and said that, I am God, and within a few days I will prove it to everyone. And Prabhupada said, yeah, everyone thinks like that. You're nothing special. with one person who stood up in another public program on the other side of the world. He said, "I am God." Prabhupada said, "You are dog." In another place, he said, "Well, you know, everyone thinks like that. Nothing special." Like that. Different ways of popping their egoism. So sometimes we see that devotees, they do some big service and looks they're getting a lot of mercy, but then it all collapses. It's typical of Rajagun, that in the beginning it builds up very big, just like big empires. They build up and then they collapse. Typical of Rajagun. And then while they're on top, they're thinking, "Yeah, we are. This is it. We are the greatest." You find in Britain, even though their empire collapsed long ago, they still think they're the best. Prabhupada said they're the most puffed up people in the world. Arjuna's laughing. He's a Russian who became a British citizen. He's a devotee. The Russians also think they're the greatest in the world, don't they? It's just like they think our nation is the greatest. It's the biggest, but that's about all. I mean, some countries have it more than others. I guess Luxembourgians, they don't have too much thinking about our country's the greatest in the world, or Estonians. Maybe they probably do, but they don't announce it too much. But everyone thinks like that, you know. My country is the best. Why? Why? So, well, I was born there. Then. That proves it, right? I mean, it's obvious. So this Rajaguna, thinking we're the best. Even by Rajaguna, one has a lot of energy to do something and something builds up. And in devotional service, it may be mixed with the desire to serve Krishna. But if the Rajaguna dominates and the desire to serve Guru and Krishna doesn't dominate, then it collapses, as we have seen in various parts of the world in our Krishna consciousness movement. It collapses, and then the whole situation for preaching Krishna consciousness actually becomes worse than even before they started. And it just makes a big mess. Because if we analyze according to Shastra, what we're trying to do here, is that their motive to serve was not as strong as their motive to impress others. I remember in Mayapur, from about 1978 on, for a few years, at the Mayapur festival, all the big gurus would give lectures, and it was an unspoken competition who could give the most far out lecture or the heaviest lecture or whatever. And one of them, he said that, you see, it was a statement which shocked all the devotees at the time. He said that, see, so many devotees, whatever they're doing just to impress the opposite sex. He said that, dancing in kirtan, distributing books. And he said, some people even take sannyas just to impress the opposite sex. So, anyway, I won't say who it is, but it's interesting who said it and what happened to him. So yeah, underlying it all is this enviousness of Krishna, which is expressed as wanting to show oneself better than others, to dominate, to exploit, to control. As Srila Prabhupada explained, that this whole modern civilization, big buildings, it's just all an expression of sex desire, that's all. So, this egoism, I am, notice me, I am better than everyone else. If someone's better than me, well, that's just some aberration, which, yeah, then we'll pull him down, that we see. What's that thing? that comes in the next verse. I will pull them down. I will kill them, my enemies. The demoniac way of thinking. They become envious of anyone who seems to be better than them. They like to dominate others who are who show subordination to them, and to mock others who are not subordinate to them. And they may, as Prabhupada says here in the purport, that the demoniac, he thinks that no one can equal him in strength, power, or wealth. He thinks that since no one can equal him in strength, power, or wealth, he can act in any way and no one can stop him. If he has an enemy who might check the advancement of his sensual activities, he makes plans to cut him down by his own power. So even in devotional service, some get in a position, and then, especially if one has a position, if one stops thinking I'm a servant and starts thinking I am a master, I am appointed by God, which may be true, but if one thinks I am some special personality, then it all turns to egoism. And even if they do big service, it's all spoiled by this egoism. No one is happy with them. They rule. It's not like they're serving together with others, but it's like ruling. They rule by fear, or sometimes by promoting some hype that they are the great devotee, they are the greatest. Others are not really up to the standard. Or even if they don't say it themselves, it's like Sai Baba. He would, or this wheelchair Sai Baba. It was, first of all, he was fuzzy hair Sai Baba, then his hair fell out and he was in a wheelchair. So the wheelchair Sai Baba, if he was accused of that people are worshipping him as God, he would say, I never said I'm God. But he lets his followers make songs about him, praising him as God, and publish them everywhere. And Venkatesh Suprabhatam, they change it to extremely sinful. They just change the lines so that it becomes Sri, I don't know, whatever, Sai Baba Tava Suprabhatam, something like that. So it may be also that one allows oneself to be promoted. Well, I don't say, but you know, my followers, they say they're going around promoting. He is the one, the great one. Even apart from official gurus, there are like self-appointed unofficial gurus who, I'm talking about within ISKCON, who make their own little sub-cult in which their followers think that they are the one, and by some word jugglery, they give lip service to their guru while just promoting themselves practically. You've seen it in Croatia, there was that, who was it, Gopal, something like that. He's still going on probably. Yeah. It's run out of persuasive power or something, is it? No, not as in the beginning they tend to be more attractive or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, in different places where people are simple generally. In Bosnia also something like that going on. In India, you know, everywhere, you know. This is the land of gurus, so what do you expect? You know. So India's greatest export to the world is bogus gurus, and there are plenty of them here also. Yeah, they bring in, I guess they bring in lots of foreign exchange and everything, you know. The government must be quite happy with them. So, they may be promoting Krishna consciousness in some way or other, but it's unhealthy. The whole atmosphere becomes unhealthy. It's not because the central object is or the focus is not purely on surrendering to Krishna, but it's appropriated, and the focus becomes on the guru or the self-appointed guru. Srila Prabhupada himself, although he did promote guru worship, there's no doubt about that, but he also made it very clear that the guru is to be worshipped because he represents the parampara and the supreme personality of Godhead, that the central object of worship is Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead. Even when one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples was like, so much, Prabhupada, and you're so great, and I only know you, I don't know Krishna, which Prabhupada himself said about his own guru. But if that's like out of balance or like almost relegating Krishna, Prabhupada didn't accept that. He said, no, you should be focused on Krishna. We only worship the guru because he teaches us through the parampara to worship Krishna. That is the meaning of guru. Not that as an independent entity, or just Krishna's kept on the side as an excuse, or the previous acharyas are kept on the side as some kind of, you know, just to give some air of credence or authorization. So then this question comes up then. You see, actually our movement is, or the whole system in Vedic culture is that one has to respect authority. The knowledge comes from up to down, just like water doesn't flow up, water flows down. So it's a hierarchical, Vedic culture is hierarchical and authoritarian, which all cultures were until the Enlightenment, when people became enlightened. And the Enlightenment has eventually led to modern society today, in which we have enlightened slaughterhouses, enlightened, you know, 70% of the population of America, the enlightened people have to get psychiatric help in their life, and, you know, six times married, six or seven, they lost count, etc., etc., etc. This is the Enlightenment. So otherwise societies were, throughout the world they are hierarchical, which means authoritarian, but with God at the top, at least nominally. And when God became the excuse, then the hierarchical societies were broken down. The kings got kicked out, the bishops got kicked out, or they just became, just like we have, constitutional monarchy, which means it's the king or queen is not a king or queen really, they're just called king or queen, that's all. So Vedic culture is top down, not bottom up. Those who are underneath are supposed to follow those who are in a higher position. That's the system. But as I quite often say when people tell me, well, that, you know, the children nowadays, they don't like to follow their parents, they don't respect their parents. But I reply that, well, you see, if the parents don't act in a manner that's respectable, how are the children going to respect them? If the parents are not ideal, if the parents themselves are just arguing among each other and just interested in money and selfish and sense enjoyment, Who's going to follow? And the same with the priests or anyone else, the teachers. In my own experience, in my childhood, so the teachers, the It was a Catholic school, so you think the teachers would be of good character. But no, clearly not. Clearly, at least not better than anyone else. And the priests, they come out of their house and do the mass, which involves drinking wine. And then they go back and watch the TV. What's the difference between them and anyone else? So people have rebelled. But actually, the whole society, they're trying to make everyone equal. Because no one has any character or quality to look up to. So everyone has an equal right to be like a dog or a pig. That's all. You shouldn't be... Everyone has free rights to do whatever you like, as long as it doesn't harm anyone else. But here we see Krishna speaks. He speaks about the Atma Deheshu, Abhyasuya Kaha. They're envious of themselves. They're actually envious of me situated within their body. They're envious of their self. They act against their own self-interest. In the so-called not harming others, they are harming themselves by spoiling their human form of life. So, Vedic culture is top-down. Authorities are to be respected and followed. And in a culture where that principle is already in place, and where those who are supposed to be respected are acting in a respectable way, in such a culture, it's not necessary to even say again and again, you have to follow your authorities, you don't have to say it. Because it's just children grow up with that, and they see it everywhere, and you don't have to tell them. Maybe in some unusual case, just like Lord Rama, he cited that one has to follow the order of one's guru, his father, in a case where everyone was telling him not to. When his father had ordered him to leave the coronation and go to the forest. And he said, I have to follow. Otherwise it wasn't necessary to, only in an unusual case, was it even necessary to cite that? Because everyone knew, they grew up with it. It's not even something you have to speak about. It's just like, you don't have to teach people that, well, you have to eat every day. You don't have to teach them that. It's just part of life, that's all. So, the top-down culture, but in the Krishna consciousness movement spreading very widely, many gurus are required, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he set the example of, he would meet people, infuse them with Krishna consciousness, and go on to his next destination, having told them, Jare dekho tare kaha Krishna upadesh, amar agyai guru haya tara edesh. We have one example of when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered South India, that he met with the Kurma Brahmana and he stayed with him for one day and he infused him with Krishna consciousness and told him to be a guru. And the Kurma Brahmana wanted to come with him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, stay here, make this place Krishna conscious. So this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did everywhere, wherever he went. Only one example is given, but he did that everywhere. So by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, many gurus are needed. By Prabhupada's order, all his disciples, they should be gurus. By Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, by Prabhupada's order, many gurus are needed. Although all may not be Diksha gurus, but every devotee is supposed to communicate Krishna consciousness to others. By teaching Krishna consciousness to others, they become a guru. And Srila Prabhupada wanted that all his disciples, he said that they should all have 10,000 disciples. So that's a lot. How many people can one person deal with. Even Srila Prabhupada had, I believe, less than 5,000 disciples, but he couldn't personally train everyone because it's physically not possible. And when I joined the movement, there was no question of meeting Prabhupada, personally speaking to him, or any such thing. We had to be trained by the older disciples who were practically shiksha gurus. So for us, what they'd learned from Prabhupada or from their senior, well, everyone learned from Prabhupada, but like the practical training in so many things they learned from their senior god siblings. So top down authority system, guru, GBC, senior devotees, all this, but there's also bottom up, that if the wound is to spread widely, then devotees in various places, they have to take the initiative, and naturally they will. If people who read Prabhupada's books or get inspired by Krishna consciousness, they want to share that with others. So that's required also to give a chance to devotees who are inspired by Prabhupada's teachings, Shastra teachings, Krishna's teachings, those who are inspired to share it with others. Obviously, newer people, they need supervision or at least some overseeing, because sometimes they can take it too far, like I was saying, they can make themselves into like a mini guru and in the wrong way. But that is a danger. But if the movement is to spread very widely, then many devotees in many locations, if it's to spread widely quickly, they should be given the power of attorney that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to spread Krishna consciousness. So such devotees, they need monitoring, but not to the extent that, you know, like nothing in my zone moves without my, not a blade of grass moves without my permission or some such thing. It's, a leader in Krishna consciousness should be to guide and to facilitate. And if necessary, if some are going out of control following their own egos, then to curb that or to bring them in line. So in this way the movement can spread very widely. But the danger, it's a danger, because devotees can become very, if they get overwhelmed by their own little preaching success, then again they can become egoistic and then the whole thing is spoiled. So it requires a liberal spirit to spread Krishna consciousness very widely, to give people a chance to come up in Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, it requires to be monitoring very carefully, so that Srila Prabhupada's desires and instructions are followed properly. So all this talk of egoism, the real question is how to ourselves, I mean, for each one of us individually, we can best serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada and of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of Krishna and all the previous acharyas. The first prerequisite is that we ourselves should be pure devotees. Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport that the Krishna consciousness movement is sending up centers all over the world so that people can associate with pure devotees and themselves become pure devotees. Therefore, Prabhupada writes, we request all the members of the Krishna consciousness movement to become pure devotees so that the world may benefit. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. So how to become egoless, or free of false ego, not egoless, that's the totally egoless, that's the Mayavadi's idea, but how can we become free of this false egoism? Well, there are various things. Menial service. But then someone might think, I'm the most humble. You see, I'm doing... Mind works in very strange ways. Living simply, not collecting all kinds of unnecessary things. Serving under authorities. Understanding our own significance. Often devotees ask me, well, how can I be humble? How can I be free from pride? Then I ask them, what are you proud about? And if you think about it, what am I proud about? We have nothing whatsoever to be proud about. We're just, if we understand our own insignificance, and that we are totally dependent on the mercy of the higher authorities, Hari, Guru, and Vaishnava. We may think I'm very advanced, but we should know that Maya can just pick us up and throw us at any time. We're not so strong that we'd, oh, I'm so strong. But Maya can just smash us at any time. We're only surviving in Krishna consciousness because of the mercy of Hari, Guru, and Vaishnava. That's a fact. It's not something that we have to try and think so that we're protected. I mean, we should think like that and then we'll be protected. But it's a fact. We are dependent. We are not independent. We are tiny jivas. Krishna is supreme. We're totally dependent on Krishna's mercy. To think any other way is egoistic. Something practical. Srila Prabhupada writes, the demon, the egoistic person, thinks that no one can equal him in strength, power, or wealth. But a devotee can look and see that every person, if we look carefully, we should be able to find something that they do better than us. And that's a fact also. I mean, it's just like the Vaishya is better, even the great Brahmana, the Vaishya is better at doing business than him. Or the great Brahmana, the potter is better at making pots. So everyone, and you may say, well, why are you making pots? What's that? But in traditional culture, if you don't have pots, you don't have food. Or water. You can, these things are required. So we're all dependent, apart from being dependent on Hari, Guru, and Vaishnava, we're dependent on other humans also. We're living in society. So we're depending on, we are dependent. So see that others are better than us in some way, seek to learn from others. And most importantly, to apply ourselves, how to become purified is to apply ourselves in devotional service. That is the purifying process. So apply ourselves to try to do service very sincerely. Hear, chant very nicely in the association of sincere devotees. We should be careful about choosing our association also. Because, you know, sometimes you'll find devotees and when they have some free time, they don't like to talk about subjects connected with devotional service. They'll talk about all kinds of different things. So we have to choose our association very carefully. And then, very important point, or central point, you might say, in performing devotional service, the submission to Guru. One accepts a Guru with the idea that Janme Prabhu say, that feeling or that understanding that birth after birth, this is not something that you know, you get a job and you have a boss for some time, and then when you feel like it, you retire or you change your job, and you don't give a damn about the boss anymore. In the school, you go to the school, you have your teachers, and at least in my case, the last day I was at school was the last day I ever saw any of my teachers ever again. I wouldn't even remember their names or anything. But it's different, the relationship with guru. The guru is supposed to act in such a way that the disciple can be free from egoism and surrender to Krishna. But one has to reciprocate in that relationship. Otherwise it doesn't happen. One has to take that guidance and act in a submissive way and be prepared to serve in all kinds of menial ways. Just like in your Gurukul you have there in Mayapur. Isn't it? There's a lot of menial service. That's practically the central part of the education, is to understand that we are here to serve Guru and Krishna, and that is purifying. Just like one professor, highly respected member of society, came from Lithuania, and his mother is phoning, "What are you doing?" "Cleaning the toilets." And she becomes distressed. "Oh, you joined a cult and they made my son a professor. Clean the toilets." "Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. But he's a professor." "Yes, that's why he's cleaning the toilets." "Exactly. You now you understood." Been making so much intellectual stool all these years. And just verbal stool, vomiting through the mouth all this intellectual hogwash. So now, yeah, become humble. So humility is the antithesis of egoism. Someone who is very egoistic, someone who can make a show of being a prominent person in this world, they are respected by other foolish, egoistic people. And we see in the modern world, you know, sport stars. This David Beckham is now a gone. I guess he's still a big icon, but a very egoistic person. I know next to nothing about him, fortunately. But even if I go to England like 3 days a year, and during the last 15 years or so, if even in 3 days a year, you just can't help hearing about him or seeing his name on some billboard or something. You see Beckham, 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 everyone. What's this Beckham? So, very egoistic, but other people, they give a lot of respect to that. But Krishna, he likes, even the good Lord, Jesus Christ said, "Blessed are the meek." What's it? You won't know, it's in English. "Blessed are the meek because," I don't know, something like that. The kingdom of God is theirs, or something like this. "Blessed are the last, for they shall be first." This is from the Sermon on the Mount. "Blessed are the meek, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Meek means humble. Like that. So Jesus had some good things to teach, no doubt. But whatever Jesus had to teach is more completely, systematically, and clearly presented in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as received through Srila Prabhupada. So, we find in the songs of Thakur Bhakti, you know, there are many, like the how to be humble. "Amito Vaishnav, e buddhi hoile amani na hobo ami." If I think I am a Vaishnava, then I won't be amani. Amani na amani. We won't be. Amani means free from pride. We won't be humble. Pratishtasa asi hridai dushibe haibo nirayagami. The desire for prestige will enter my heart and pollute it, and I'll become a candidate for going to hell. Therefore, he says, tai shishatava takibo sarvada naloibo pujanka. Therefore, he prays to his guru, I'll remain always your disciple and not accept anyone's worship. And actually, he also initiated devotees. So how can we one be a... It's like a paradox. How can you be a guru and accept honor if you're going to be a Vaishnava? The thing is, if one thinks, if one's consciousness is more, I am a guru than I am a servant, then you're in trouble. Vaishnava always thinks, I am a servant. Then by becoming a guru or a leader or whatever, he gets that position due to his strong... One who has a strong service mentality should take that up, and that service mentality should increase with the opportunity to guide others, understanding oneself to be a simply acting as a representative, not thinking, I am a guru, these are my followers. Then one is in trouble. So one should always remain humble, submissive. Even externally, one has to take the role of someone has to do that. One has to take the role of a leader, guru. That also we sing the... what is it? Shakale shanman karite shakati dehonata jata jata. You sing that, please teach me, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings to his guru, how I may offer respect to all. Jata jata means we offer respect to all living beings, more so to Vaishnavas, more so to initiated Vaishnavas, and more so to those who are fully nindadi shunya hrida, those who are free from the tendency to criticize others, which we understand this. That means, of course, a pure devotee, he's duty bound by Krishna to speak the message of Bhagavad Gita, which might seem that there's criticism, but what that means is that the tendency to like put others down to push yourself up, materialistic people have. One who's free from that tendency is a pure devotee and to be honored. So by serving such devotees, by offering respect to others, one becomes free from the desire for respect for oneself. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Yes, please.
What is the source of devotee's confidence and how it can be cultivated?
What is the source of a devotee's confidence? You mean self-confidence or having confidence in others?
Like confidence in devotional service.
Faith. You're talking about faith. Yeah. Well, faith arises from association with devotees. Actually, all aspects of bhakti. That is, faith is the beginning of bhakti. It is the central thread of bhakti. Shraddhavanjan hoi bhakti adhikari. One who has faith is eligible to perform bhakti. So in the beginning there's some little faith, and that comes from association with devotees. That verse is there, ādo śraddhā tata sadhu saṅga. That first comes faith, then association with devotees. But even that initial faith comes from some initial contact with devotees. And then sadhu saṅga in this context means to regularly and associate with devotees. Yeah.
How to understand the charisma? I mean, some devotees have more charisma, some...
Charisma.
Is it an expression of false ego?
Is it an expression of false ego? Well, like, it can be, or it can be Krishna conscious charisma also. charisma, how do we define that? Some kind of quality by which one is attractive to others. In which, by one's personality, one is attractive to others. One may be attractive by bodily appearance, but one who is attractive by personality, they're called charisma. And it usually suggests one who is attractive to others in a shallow way, isn't it? It doesn't suggest anything very substantial. In a shallow or unthinking way. Just like you could say Hitler had a lot of charisma. He was able to attract people to follow him. We could say Srila Prabhupada had a lot of charisma, but that obviously that's a very different quality to that of Hitler's. Let's analyze this now. Hitler's charisma by which he was able to get people to follow him was that he was very convinced of himself, and he offered a program to people that we as a nation all together, we can be benefited. You follow me and we'll all be benefited together. So he offered sense gratification based on hatred of others, which was the German people at that time went for that because their nation was smashed. They'd been militarily, they'd been defeated, their economy was smashed. And, you know, no one likes to think that we're useless. They think, come on, we're Germans, we're great. And so he's saying that, you know, it's not our fault, it's their fault. So we should get together under me and we'll smash them all together. So people liked that message. He was an expert speaker in a manner that to galvanize, bring people together. Devotees, politicians. In Bengal in general, politicians, they always, when they get up on the podium, they always speak like that. That's considered the way to give a speech. You shout and you yell and you scream. And fate was with him for some time anyway. What he did worked for some time, for a short time. It was successful. So that was his charisma. What other kind of charisma? David Beckham, I just mentioned. I don't know enough about him to say. Maybe I shouldn't say because I don't know. But he seems to have I guess hype he's built up by the media. This and that. I don't know enough about him. There's no charisma. There aren't any prominent charismatic politicians in India at the present time, it doesn't seem. Not enough to capture the attention of the majority. Prabhupada's charisma, well, he wasn't promoting himself. And in the beginning, his disciples, they didn't think of him in the way that the later disciples thought of him. The later disciples, you know, they saw Srila Prabhupada as in a very elevated way, and his first disciple, they also saw him in an elevated way, but in a very personal way. Like their grandfather or something like that. They had a lot of personal interaction with him. So what is that pure charisma? Because he's presenting Krishna, who's all attractive. It's not a perverted reflection of anything. It's the real thing. So because he manifested Krishna, he gave Krishna to people, and that was the attraction. He was empowered by Krishna. So that's a different kind of charisma altogether to that of a Hitler or some cinema star, which it's all the cinema star or the pop star, it's all built up by the mass media. And the cinema star or the pop star, they adopt a persona, some kind of personality that they project, which goes along with their image. They have an image. which somehow people are attracted to. So, yeah, in devotional service also, like imitation and following, that we can project, we can imitate Prabhupada and project ourselves as being, you know, high, empowered preacher, compassionate, humble, etc., etc. But the real thing is something different.
Usually, in India, there's imitation gurus.
Imitation gurus in India, yeah.
They're assuming this kind of role.
They assume a kind of stereotyped role. This guy in Bangalore, as I've said many times, says this Sri Sri fellow. It seems to me that he it's almost as if he studied the stereotype of what people expected a sadhu to be, what we would call a bogus sadhu, and just followed that. You know, everything, you know, the long flowing robes, the beard, the giggly feminine voice, the smile, the talk, you know, losing words like wonderful a lot, and talking in a superficially attractive and spiritual way, but with no fixed philosophy. You just change your philosophy sentence by sentence, because there is no real philosophy. And it works for him, for what he wants now. We should learn what it means to be a sadhu from the example of Srila Prabhupada. And follow his example, not imitate. Just like some devotees, they'd imitate Prabhupada's chanting, they listen to his voice and then try and chant in exactly the same tone. That's ridiculous. Chanting japa.
There's one group of devotees who believe that they need to only listen to their particular guru and maybe else not attend other programs.
There's one group, there's more than one group. There are groups, various groups who are like very inclusive.
They say that we need to have single-pointed...
I was thinking you were talking about another group. See, there is more than one group. You have to focus. You'll get confused if you go here and there. Well, there is some... Something can be said for that point of view. That if you try to follow too many masters, then you get confused. That's also there. But to the extent where you don't talk to other ISKCON devotees and or have anything to do with them, that's a bit much, isn't it?
Also like kind of ego, you know?
Would seem to be, yeah. You can't blame the followers so much. They just got into that net. Yeah.
Some devotees don't realize that they are egoistic, but others can see if they are very, and it's very obvious.
Some devotees can't realize they're egoistic, but to others it's obvious. Well, I spoke about this in a lecture 2 days ago. I already spoke about that. What can you do? You can't say anything to them. If you tell you're egoistic, then it's not going to change anything. The only thing, what can you do? The only thing is, if they do apply them, that's why I said that Prabhupada, he engaged many, he made leaders, people who could get things done, who in many cases appeared to be somewhat egoistic, but Prabhupada insisted that you have to follow the four regulated principles, you have to rise early in the morning, you have to have full morning program, chant your rounds, read the books. So he insisted that along with doing everything else, they follow the process of devotional service. with the idea that they get purified. So, we can, it may take some time because it's, anyway, if you find someone appears to be behaving in a manner that is more egoistic than Krishna conscious, then just say Hare Krishna to them and avoid them as much as possible, which actually happens in many cases anyway. You don't have to tell people to do that because it's very difficult to live with people who are just trying, you know, they see you, they can only relate with people if they're under their boots, that's all. And they see others, either they can help me in my plans or not, and if they can, we're friends with them. Like other leaders, that's how they deal with them. Otherwise, they're not. Friends and enemies. Then?
When we criticize wrong practices among devotees, easily that changes into the anger against that devotee.
When we criticize wrong practices of other devotees, often that can turn into anger against that devotee. It can turn into egoism on our part also, so we have to be very careful. Yeah.
How to remain critical only of things not similar.
How to remain critical of the sin but not the sinner. How to? I never was much good at all these psychological tricks. I mean, I wouldn't have made a good psychologist. So I don't know how to answer that. You know, chant Hare Krishna and don't get too mental about it all, that's all. Don't get, you know, too much into all this deep analysis. Yeah. Don't hate the sinner. All right, we respect. Yeah, devotees. Anyone who is a devotee is an exalted person. That's all, we think like that.
If every one of us learns of God, then how can we criticize
others? Oh, this is a Mayavadi question. If we're all Angsha of God, how can we criticize others? Whoever answered this question, they need beating on the head. Not literally. Actually, literally, but we don't do it. You are not God. Part and parcel of God. We have minute independence, which if we misuse, then we are beaten by Maya. So the beating of a devotee is to save. The idea is to beat them into shape so that they can come out from the beatings of Maya. That's all. All discussed in detail in Strong Speaking. I got the final editing, it seems, so you can lay it out now. I say that in one of the statements in that book is that the devotee's strong words, they may seem unpleasant, but they are meant to save the person from the much more unpleasant kicks of Maya birth after birth. Anything else, sir?
He's asking that does Krishna doesn't know who is doing wrong.
Krishna knows who's doing wrong. Certainly Krishna knows who's doing wrong. What's that got to do with anything? That means that you just leave everything to Krishna. Just let the world go on and Krishna will organize everything. Tell this person, tell them to read Bhagavad Gita as it is. Try and understand what is the reality. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are all His servant. Krishna has His representatives in this world. You need to understand. Please read Bhagavad Gita as it is by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and associate with devotees who can explain that to you. Because the common, very common misconceptions about God, that all are God, God knows everything, so why do we need to do anything? These are when Krishna is merciful, when Krishna wants me to, then I will surrender to him, and all these kind of common misconceptions, which I'm not going to try and straighten out all your multiple misconceptions with a one-liner here. No, you have to hear regularly the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So we'll finish that. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.